Why, that studio, they ought to board up. Ought to board that thing up with some ancient skeletons put in there. By the way, I wonder how many of you live in houses that have things sealed in the walls. Oh, why, what do you mean? Don't look so sick, for crying out loud. Now, come on, kiddies, out of the way there. Out of the way, out of the way now. Come on, Rousemith. I'm very curious about that. I think we've lost a wonderful custom, and that was such a good one. And that's a custom that goes back to the very earliest days of man's primeval existence. I mean, even before, before everything, before Milton Berle, all of them. Yes, you'd be surprised that there were things going on before you were born. Isn't that hard to believe, though, that things actually did happen before you? You know, people walked around scratched and sweated and got mad. And it's hard to really look at reality that way. It really is. You can sit here and be as abstract and as theoretical as you want, but it is still very difficult to consider the fact. Now they're standing out there. It's still very difficult to consider the fact, which is an obvious fact, that Richard the Lionhearted must have walked around and scratched and sweated, you know, just like we do, and gotten mad and sad and unhappy and had trouble with chicks and the whole thing, you know. And then he'd sit around. You can never imagine Attila the Hun sitting there on his what is it that they rode, the barbarians, Attila the Hun. They didn't ride real horses, did they? They rode things that were shaggy. Weren't their horses shaggy? No, they didn't ride ponies. Come on, they did not come riding at the battle with ponies. No. The early horses, there were horses that were the Mongol horses were not ponies. They were big horses. There were many big horses that had hair all over them. A lot of hair, you see. And he's sitting on this hairy horse. Well, sure, their horses had claws. They didn't have hoofs like real horses. And he's sitting there on there, and, you know, the barbarians are sacking towns. How long has it been since you've enjoyed some good sacking out there, friend? And they've been sacking towns and raising Cain and blowing the terrain up. And Attila is sitting there, and he's scratching. You know, they were very hairy people, and the I don't know whether any of you know anything about beard roaches, but any man who has worn a beard for any considerable length of time can tell you about beard roaches. This is one of the things that very few people talk about, and it might interest you to know that several famous people in the historical past were bothered no end by them. Oh, yes, yes. Shaw, as a matter of fact, wrote two or three. Why do you think he was so mad at the doctors? You know, Shaw had a thing on doctors for years. It was because of beard roaches. They could do nothing about it. No, really, I'm telling you, everybody says, oh, come on. No, I'm telling you the truth. So you get the beard roach problem, and you know, you just can't picture Attila the Hun sitting on his charger there, that hairy horse with the fleas and everything else, and they've just sacked a couple of towns, and the smoke is rising, and they've got the loot. And he's sitting there looking off to the distance, you know, and he says, what the devil is it all about? What is it all about? No, you just can't picture him saying that, you know. And gallops off. But he must have, just like we do. But what I'm getting at, of course, is one of the great traditions of the past, which, speaking of great traditions, I have a note here that there is an interfaith hootenanny being held. And so right now, we are saluting the interfaith hootenanny. This is one of our big acts from the hootenanny. I wonder how this crew would go down at the bitter end. Hold it there. Okay. Now, just keep it there in abeyance, Donald. One of the great traditions of the past, particularly of English past, was taking people you didn't like and sealing them off in a room, just, you know, putting bricks in the door and sealing it up with concrete, and that's the end of it. I think that's a great, tremendous tradition. I think we could do more of that. I can just see a guy sealing his wife off in the breezeway. He just has it all boarded up and put some siding on it and let some vines grow up, and that's the end of her. That's the end of it. I know a lot of people who would just like to seal their kids off in the playroom forever. Just brick it up. Just spray it with paint, brick it up, put some concrete on there and hang some mahogany paneling there and put a couple of pictures on the wall and forget them. You know, they yell for a while, a couple of weeks, and that's the end of it. Sure. And, of course, the place would be haunted, which would add a little, believe me, there's no question about it, but that Stamford is haunted now. But if in a few years we got some real haunting going, we'd have something happening there. The tourists would go out there, and it's, you know. Gee, what's the matter with me? This is terrible. This is an awful thing to be talking about because, you know, everybody who suggests a thing like that, like boarding up, I would like to entertain suggestions now. We have a bad studio back here. WOR's terrible studio. It's like a little closet. And that's how I got this idea. I was thinking of certain talent that I would like, certain people around here that I would like to see boarded up in Studio 11, Don, forever. You know, just board them up, you know, and just forget it, the whole thing, get rid of the whole mess. And, of course, for a while, they would just think they've got a new private office. And, you know, after a while, they get a little hungry, and then after that, you know, when they find that the phones have been cut off. I imagine a lot of guys would not mind being boarded up in a concrete blockhouse as long as they had a phone. And as long as they could contact... You know, speaking of phones... As long as we're on the subject of it, a couple of nights ago we did a show that had to do with the future of people and mankind, one thing or another, and the automated world that is coming and that is beginning to show out in California. And a lot of you obviously misunderstood it. I did not at any point refer to Big Brother. I did not at any point say that mankind is getting better. You know, it's funny how many people. Every time you talk about the future, they assume you are saying it's going to be better. And they wrote me and they said, "Now, Mr. Shepherd, you've overlooked the point that crime will continue. Of course it will continue. Who said it won't? And that the hatred will continue. Of course it will continue. Whoever said anything about it not?" No. I was really referring to the physical aspect of life in the 21st century. And the physical aspect of... as a matter of fact, I would like to predict that as we get more automated in our world, as things are done more for us, as it becomes more and more difficult to achieve any kind of real intrinsic goal, since there won't be any goals, really, to measure, that lawlessness will grow, because lawlessness itself will become a goal. And there will be no laws, I think, in the eventuality as we know them today. I really believe that by the time the 21st or the 22nd century arrives, that the laws that we live under, the morality code or whatever it is that we're all controlled by, either loosely or more tightly, depending on the individual or the area you live in, all of these things will be literally things of a far distant past. They will be about as remote to the people of the 21st century, and I'm talking about mid-21st here, as, let's say, the laws and the attitudes that governed man during the Dark Ages are to us. And they made sense to those people. We rarely find, we look at laws of the olden days and people laugh about them as, oh, how ridiculous. No, they were not ridiculous at the time. At the time, to the people who lived under those laws, they made absolute, perfect, and total sense. So I believe that our laws and our attitudes and our moralities will not be at all, will not have, bear no relationship to our moralities of today. When I say our, I mean the people of the 21st century or thereabouts. And they will look, oh yeah, they'll look back on us as either being totally benighted or as another kind of man. They will just look back on it just like we look back on a man of the Dark Ages as being another kind of man. Do you feel any kinship with a man of the Dark Ages? Let's say the year 940. Do you? Well, that's right. If you just don't. It's just another kind of man. You don't even think about him as being related to your Uncle Fred. You just don't. But nevertheless, the facts are there. You know, that all of us, no matter how many years we've been in one part of the world or one part of the country, we all stem from a common root, that tree, mankind. All giraffes are somehow related, whether they like it or not, and you are related, whether you like it or not, with a lot of people because of the mere fact you are part of the species. And so you go back to the man of 1038, or you go back even further than that, you go back to the man of 4000 B.C., and he's nevertheless part of the species. Now, his laws and his morality, of course, made perfect sense to him. And I submit something here. I'll have to submit my theory of the increasing mystery here. This is a Shepherd theory here, which of course is very invalid because there are giant holes in it. But I believe, no, seriously, there's a giant, fantastic holes in my theories. I immediately put this forth. Microphone's falling apart. Chief studio. Push button, double carbon mic. Right out loud. The only thing that's well produced around here are the commercials. Hit it, Donald. Come on. We all know that. They come on louder than anything. Oh, shit.
Aha. Good evening, monsieur.
Monsieur Brahan.
Good evening. Life is a ball. Your regular table is waiting.
I do a great Charles boy.
Charles boy. May I take the lady's coat? The usual, monsieur?
Oui.
The unusual.
That's
the taste of an ale man and a Ballantine ale. Bolder, keener, more to the point. Next time you order up enjoyment, be a man about it. A Ballantine ale man.
Who is the ale man?
You are speaking to me of Ballantine ale? Better than that. I could do better than that. You come with me. I show you something real.
Every time you
Gee, that was an exciting commercial. Hi there. I'm sorry, I'm doing a program here. Speaking of exciting commercials, we have with us here... Yes, we spend a lot of time working on that sort of thing. Speaking of angry people, this is WOR AM at FM New York. Speaking of the Dark Ages. And we'll be here for a while. But, yes, I have this theory, and I'm going to propose it here. Now, come on, Lee, you get over here. You leave those people alone. Hey. Don't mess with business, none of yours. Cause more trouble than you'll ever solve. While we're on the thing about this theory, I must get to the point here. I'm shilly-shallying here. The theory is this, that a lot of people believe that in the early days, let's say 4,000, by early, I don't know how early you might say. After all, do you know that many scientists today believe that man has been on the face of the globe for roughly 2 million years? So, you know, it'd be pretty hard to say the early days were 950. You know, the year 950, that's just nothing. I mean, I don't know how it must have been 1.5 million years ago and what they thought, how the weather was. There are a lot of theories about that, and they can prove how the weather was pretty much in various parts of the world. But one thing that is apparent, that within comparatively recent history, and by recent history I mean, say, 10,000 years ago, that as we have gotten further and further along, mysteries have increased rather than decreased. Now, most people would have you believe, in fact, I was sitting downstairs here about an hour or so ago talking to Martha Dean, and Martha Dean says, of course, in the early days, man was confronted with so many mysteries. He really was. He was confronted with mysteries. And everywhere he looked, there was a mystery. And so naturally, he had a sense of being afraid of the entire environment in which he lived. And I would like to say no. I would say it was quite the opposite. That in the earlier days, man had an explanation for every mystery. In fact, if you know anything about the Indian legends, he explained everything very simply. There was no problem. The moon would go from one side to the other. There was the chariot. The moon would ride. The man drove the chariot. The sun had a very definite... There was no question about explaining the sun. You know this, Don. They explained it completely. They explained every... Well, if you know anything about the pantheistic system, when they had the giant collection of gods, that every... explanation was clean, complete, and total. It left no holes. And so if there was a forest fire, that was caused by the god of the forest being angry. And there was no question about it. Why was the god of the forest angry? Because the god of the sun had been blocked out by the god of the rain for a couple of days, and it went on and on and on. There was no question about it. They could explain it all. And every tribe had a medicine man or a shaman or someone who could explain all the various phenomena everywhere completely, thoroughly, and utterly. No question about it. Now, as we have gotten further and further along, learning trivialities, by trivialities, we learn what makes the atom tick, almost. We learn all these little things. We learn about chemistry. We learn about mathematics. All the other things somehow seem to be more difficult to explain. Literally. They really are. And so we have now arrived at the point where we ignore the big questions and concentrate on the little ones. And by figuring out all the little questions and answering them, we feel as though we are answering all the questions. We have answered everything. And so by understanding the molecular structure of matter, we figure that we have explained matter. And we feel confident in that. By being able to shoot a rocket into a certain area of space, we somehow feel that we've explained the universe. We've explained it. But you can't fool kids, although kids are being sucked into it, because I'm sure that many kids today feel this. I wonder whether kids still look out, as kids have since time immemorial have done, whether kids stand around and look up at the sky and say, well, yeah, I know that's the Milky Way, but what's beyond that? And some guy says, well, you see, beyond that is another galaxy. And he says, all right, okay, what's beyond that? And they say, well, there's another galaxy, this number 422D, Centauri Orion 416, E plus 3, times the square root of 9, that's that one up there. He says, but what's beyond that? Well, after a while, it gets pretty irritating. He says, well, there's more of them. And then it goes on, and then, see, there is a theory that space is ever expanding. He says, but what's beyond the space where it's ever... Well, it's next semester. Well, you take that up. Well, now, I'm sure that the kids are being sucked into the world of superficial knowledge, which is to say that as we conquer the problem of liquid fuel propulsion systems for rockets, we are conquering the eternal questions. I'm sure that kids are being involved in that. They really are. They're being sucked in. Well, I don't know. I don't know whether or not so as we get closer, as we get further, really closer and further. It's a funny thing. It's kind of like as you get more knowledge, you get less. Have you ever noticed a really dedicated academician? That a really dedicated academician generally will not even look around the world. He will not look outside of the window. The more dedicated he is to this nice, precise ball of contrived logical thinking that consists of his field, he is prone to more and more draw into that nice little Brillo pad of knowledge that his field contains. And so today it's very difficult to talk to a philosopher. Have you ever gone, one of the most contained of all the subjects is the philosopher. What he really does today, the philosopher today, is a man who knows what philosophers of the past have said, and it is a comparative thing. It's almost like a religion. He compares James with Schopenhauer. He talks at great length of the Kierkegaardian theories as opposed to various theories held by the Nietzscheans and so on up and down the line. And you say, but what about West 68th Street? And he says, that has nothing to do with it. He will say, do not bring irrelevancies into it. And so it becomes a beautifully contrived... And so many people, it's wild to see how many people, when you propose various questions to them, will answer by submitting to you quotes. They will submit quotations. They will submit a quotation from some man who lived in 1712. That answers it as far as they're concerned. Literally answers it. I wish I could feel that way. I really do. I wish I could say, well, I know the answer to that. Why, Nietzsche said. That's the answer. You know, you shrug your shoulders, you walk away. And yet there are millions of people who will do that. Millions, trillions. It's pretty scary to find that entire systems have been based on quotes that bear little or no relationship. Now, I'm speaking of governmental systems, little or no relationship to the existence of the now. It's a wild thing to meet a pure Marxist who will quote Marx endlessly. And poor old Marx, of course, was writing most of what he wrote long before the Industrial Revolution really became a fact, and certainly long before automation had anything. He couldn't have conceived of automation. Couldn't have conceived of. And many of the theories of the Marxists have about as much relationship to the reality of the world today as an alchemist do. You come out with a bat's wings and that. And an alchemist can make a really good case for what he believes in, as long as you don't know anything about the periodic table. As long as you don't know anything about molecular structure, he can make a tremendous case for bat's wings and newt eggs. He really can, because he has a great library behind him to quote. And if you don't think so, you ought to go through some of the volumes of forgotten lore that alchemists have put together. Now, on the other hand, let's just talk about the Marxists. We're talking about people here today, too. That many guys will quote in the democratic world, in the world of our world, of the capitalistic world, will quote sources and attitudes and behavior statements that have little or no relationship to the now. Absolutely none. They will quote Jefferson, for example. Well, let me tell you, do you know that the world of Jefferson was as different from our world as the land of the moon is from, say, Indiana today? It really was a different world. And yet, they will quote him as though he is saying it about 68th Street now. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sure that if Jefferson were around today, that many of the things he said then, he could not say today. People will quote Lincoln, and of course 1861 was exactly 103 years ago. And Dad, you know the changes that have been wrought in your life in 5 years. Can you imagine the changes in 103 years? Incredible. And they will quote the Constitution, for example, literally the citizen's right to bear arms. People will say, well, that makes it, it's illegal for them to tell me I can't go around with a .45 strapped on me. Well, do you know what the America of 1777 was like as opposed to the America of 1964? The fact of a citizen having arms in those days was often because there was a fantastic frontier that extended from, as far as they knew in those days, it could have been extended to almost infinity, this giant frontier that had millions and millions of ways to undo a man unless he did have some kind of a firearm. And the law or the legal system was very tenuous on the frontier. So if you told a man he couldn't have arms, that's like telling a man, I'm sorry, fella, you can't have a life preserver. You got to swim all the way across the ocean by yourself. Well, taking arms away from a man was literally taking his life away in many cases in 1777 when the Constitution... But today it's another story. That giving a man arms is often the cause of taking another man's life. It's quite the opposite. And so you find that these various things, and of course I know I'm going to get a lot of yelling about this, but it is a fact that both sides of any one given question are often inclined to quote sources that go back a million years, that were bearing on conditions of the time. Really, and the people of the time, of course, could not foresee. I'm sure that Thomas Jefferson could not have ever foreseen the New Jersey Turnpike. Couldn't have comprehended it. Could not. He could not have comprehended an automobile. Just a simple thing like that. That it would have seemed amazing to Jefferson if you told him that the average citizen could get into a capsule which is what a car is, and travel from Philadelphia to New York, which at those days was like a four-day trip, swinging by the vines and swimming the rivers and fighting hand over tooth over foot. You know how long it took them to get from a place like Virginia to, say, Philadelphia in those days, which is a comparatively short trip today? That was months, really. And if you told him that a guy could travel from New York to Philadelphia in his own little capsule, in less than 2 hours, which is what you can do, he couldn't have comprehended it. Could not have even. This is fantasy, ridiculous, silly. So naturally, he could not. Certainly, can you imagine him comprehending then the idea that people could talk through the air, just like I'm talking to you, that a man could sit in a little room in New York City and you could hear him living in Ohio instantly as he says this? He could say something and instantly you could hear him. Instantly, you know, the show is carried on Armed Forces Radio. You know that, Don. That instantly that I will be also heard in Nigeria? Most people of the Americas did not ever hear of Nigeria then in those days. You know, this was incredible. Well, so naturally, he could not have comprehended the idea of a police system so efficient that a man sitting in a little room could tell a policeman in one of these little capsules 2 miles away that a man was in danger and to go there immediately. And 3 minutes later, he'd be there. So, you know, all I'm trying to say here is that it's very difficult, you know, to argue with the generalities that people will come up and show you. But when you point out the specificity, when you point out the actual conditions, that it usually bears no relationship. So a man will tell you, it's fascinating to see how many political philosophies are based on quotations that are totally irrelevant today. I've heard political statements in the last 4 months that are incredible, absolutely incredible. So many people seem to think all you have to do, if there are large numbers of people unemployed as due to automation, they use such words as re-educate. What do you mean, re-educate? Maybe we need the re-education. You know? I mean, maybe the ones who are working need the re-education. I don't know. And then, of course, every time I see some little signs again of the devil theory popping up. I hate to bring the devil into it. But every time somebody suggests that an entire way of thinking could very well be based on some false premises that were true, real premises when they were originally conceived, immediately, that is the work of the devil. I noticed the other day that somebody, there was a committee formed, I think we referred to it on the show, a committee that had to do with the idea that eventually we are going to have to reconsider our whole system of reward and work and our system of how much a man is worth, that you put in an honest day's work and you get an honest day's pay and all that stuff, when the day of total automation comes, what will be an honest day's work? Well, automation is coming, you know, whether you like it or not. What will be an honest day's work? How will you pay a man? Money is becoming almost obsolete, really, today. This committee was formed, and they've talked about these problems. Well, what do you think happened? Immediately, there was a headline in one of the local papers that said, "Commies and leftists involved in plan to..." So even though it should be quite evident to even the most chowder-headed man that the world is changing and very fast, that in spite of the fact that it is, he likes to blame it on the commies or the leftists or whatever devil he prefers. So are you aware that in Russia, that the obvious change that is going on in Russia today, that the old ideas of the Marxists and the Leninists, many of the ideas that they lived by, that they created their world by, are obviously going by the boards. obviously that there is an entirely new attitude beginning to sweep the youth throughout Russia. That who do you guess? I want you to guess who they blame it on. That's right. That's right. That those terrible bourgeois, imperialistic, warmongering, capitalistic American ideas are beginning to infest the youth. So wherever you go, wherever things seem to be going to pot, it is because of that, of the devil, whatever devil it is that you happen to be hung on. And so everywhere in the world, I was in Nigeria, the same thing that was happening. I was in Nigeria, I talked to an old Nigerian gentleman who came from the old school and who came from a tribal system that was very well established, and it had its mores and attitudes completely all worked out. He was a product of it. He was in his 70s. He believed in the Indian or the native doctor, who was the native doctor. This was what we would call a medicine man, and he could he was a distinguished gentleman. And I sat in a hotel with him and a couple of other people, and he was telling us how the world, how everybody, the youngsters, were all going to pot. The world was changing. It was getting very bad as far as he was concerned. Of course, what he meant was that many of the youngsters were no longer interested in the tribal system. They wanted to see something else. They wanted to learn something else, and they wanted to do other things. And to him, this was the work of the foreign devils. This was the work of those evil people, whatever they were, you see. Now, in London, you'll find the same thing going on. You'll find people there who, since a lot of those Nigerians are coming to London, a lot of the older gentlemen there will be saying, well, of course, you know, these foreign ideas, a lot of these people are coming in, and it's causing trouble, and so on up and down the line. But the facts of the matter are that very few of us will accept the obvious, and that is that the world is rapidly and completely changing, and it is not the result of any one single devil. It is not the result even of possibly an evil there. It's the result of time. It is the result of time. I'm sure that a guy living in a cave must have been very unhappy when the first guy said, look, I had this cave thing up to my neck. I'm going to go out and I'm going to put some sticks together and live under a little pile of sticks. The first house was built, you know. So he put some sticks together and he says, the devil with the cave business, that's always wet. I can't stand the cave. It's got bats in it. And so I'm going out in the woods and I'm going to put some sticks together. And I'm sure that the cave guy said, look at this. Look at this. What are they? Look, what are the kids coming to? You know? What? The foreign devils. I mean, because there must have been some tribe that didn't have caves around and they had sticks. And so a couple of them moved in the neighborhood, and the next thing you know, the whole neighborhood's going to pot. Everyone's moving out of caves. Why, what's the matter? Bats were good enough for my grandfather. And it goes on and on. And, well, time is the great thief. It is also the great builder. And time takes away from some people and gives to others. But eventually it always takes away. Eventually it takes away in the end from all of us. By taking away, it takes away our ability to comprehend the new world. This is what it really does. And a lot of guys, of course, are fighting frantically to continue to comprehend the new world while retaining the old world. This is where the problems arise. It is an almost impossible thing to. Now, again, a lot of people are going to say, well, what are you doing? Are you advocating the... No, I'm not. Advocacy has nothing whatsoever to do with it. I don't think that a guy sitting in his cave looking out and remarking that eventually everyone is going to live under a little pile of sticks, I don't think he was advocating or anything. He's merely saying, there it is, man. And there are some things to be said for it. And he'll also say there are some things not to be said for it. For example, you know, houses of sticks have a tendency to blow away. I've never known of a cave to blow away yet. So in any event, whatever we lose, we gain something, and you have to decide in the end what you gain, is it worth what you lose? And of course, the final end of it all is every man lives his own life, whether he likes it or not. This is the most unpleasant of all truths that most people will fight against, that every man does live his own life. It is very hard for parents to comprehend the fact that they have given birth to an individual who will live his own life, who will die his own death. This is a fact. He's not going to live your grandfather's life. He is not going to die your grandfather's death. You yourself, whoever you might be, you know inside of you, way down deep inside of you, that you're alone. You know way down deep inside of you that you're living your own thing, and whatever it is you believe, those things you believe, are your things you believe. One of the ways that people have always tried to get away from this basic, very hard, harsh truth is to build great systems where the system somehow unifies people to such an extent that it seems that everybody is together, where it seems that everybody has that we're all one. And so, naturally, when this system, whatever the system is, whether it be a system of economics, whether it be a system of religion, whether it be a system of any kind of system of thought, whenever it seems to be threatened, naturally, people will fight like fiends because you're bringing out another time, bringing out that terrible thing again. You're bringing out that thing that we're all hanging in here alone, man. And wow, people will fight. They'll fight that more than they will fight. Many people will fight that to the point they'll die for it. They will die literally for that. And it's called an honorable death. And I say, well, maybe it is. I don't know. But the facts of the matter are that it is. I'm sure that there are more than one guy sitting down, deciding to go off on a crusade. 1,000 or so years ago, or more, it would be more, actually, deciding that he was going to go off to some place to get killed to defend his system, or what he considered defending his system. He went off with the full knowledge, secret, of course, that if his system was not defended, something else, more serious than the death of the system, would happen. He would suddenly realize he's alone. This is one of the reasons why man has always had a tremendous, tremendous, shall we say, predilection towards uniforms. What do you think fashions are but changing uniforms? Changing uniforms. People want to remain like other people. They want to be like other people. Tremendous drive. You try walking down the street with a totally different kind of clothing. And I'm not talking about a known type. Now, don't wear a toga. That's a known kind of clothing. What would happen if I were to walk down the street, say, just wearing a coal scuttle on my head? Because I like coal scuttles. I put a coal scuttle. I had one fitted up with a sweatband, and I went down the street wearing a coal scuttle. Well, of course, obviously, within the hour, I would be out of Bellevue. Why? Well, because people don't like to see other people walking around with coal scuttles. And it would be very hard to explain to them why you like a coal scuttle. And that's the end of it. It's as simple as that. Now, it is quite true that some people would wear coal scuttles for the wrong reason. In other words, they could be sick. They really could be insane. But if you, as a sane person, came to the conclusion that tomorrow morning you would like to wear a spittoon on your head, because you like the looks of brass spittoons, you would like a spittoon on your head, and you would like to wear it down to the BBD&O office that you work in, I'm sure that you could not conceivably do it. Why? Well, there are a lot of reasons why. The mob would follow you down the street with torches. They really would. And what? Why? Because that mob is afraid. It's afraid of a lot of things. And one of the things, of course, that it's afraid of is unorthodoxy, because unorthodoxy is real. Now, a lot of people think they are unorthodox. A lot of people do. There are millions who do. But they are very unorthodox in a very orthodox manner. Now, for example, let's take Dr. Strangelove. This is a very orthodox view of war. Totally orthodox view. Based on man's insanity. That's an orthodox view. If you were to write an unorthodox movie about war, you would say that the only time man is sane is when he's warring. That would scare him, boy. I'll tell you, that would scare him. But you go along and you'll find that orthodoxy often is just that unorthodoxy is another kind of orthodoxy. Totally, it never would occur. You see, to the left wing and the right wing, that there is something else that has nothing to do with the middle.
Because most people say if you're not left-wing or you're not right-wing, you must be in the middle, which is even worse. Well, there could be something entirely different. It has nothing to do with left or right or middle. Well, be careful. You bring that one out, you're going to get beaten down by all of them. The middle guy's going to hit you, the right wing is going to hit you, and the left wing is going to hit you. You're going to get beaten to a pulp. Believe me. You're going to have, at one time, you're going to have Ayn Rand after you, and on the other hand, you're also going to have, you're going to have Khrushchev after you. You're going to have the left, the right, everybody's going to be beating you down. It is possible, you know. There is another way. There are millions of ways of lives. There are millions of things you could wear. Yes, you could wear a spittoon to work tomorrow. You could not go to work tomorrow, you know. Has that occurred to you? You could decide to build a birch bark canoe. Try that one on for size. Well, I don't know whether it'll ever happen. It never will, because our concern for maintaining a system is so deep. It goes so deep that anthropologists have spent literally centuries devising various ways to study the growth of various systems, various cultures, various civilizations. These are all systems, by the way. Whenever you use the term culture, you're referring to a system of thought and behavior. When you use the term even political system, it is literally that, a system, to beat the system. What does a system do? What does a system of the races do? Well, it's designed to beat the horses. Well, there's been never a system that's worked. We know that. They've had all kinds of trouble. Because in the end, the horse keeps falling down, or one thing or another happens. But the system is literally a very important part of our world, whatever that system be. And people will get very angry with me often because I don't get angry at the right things. Or I seem to get angry to them at the wrong things. Because it is very hard to comprehend, let's say, the non-system, quote, the non-system attitude. Now, it is true that I am as much a product of the system as you are. I concede that. I concede that wholeheartedly and completely. But it to me is highly revealing to find that from night to night, various systems will be angry at various things I've said. And the systems are diametrically opposed quite often. For one program, I will be attacked by three different systems, all three of them opposed. Well, where are you, you know? Why, who knows? try a spittoon tomorrow. See how far you get, Dad. Well, for that matter, buy yourself a little motorcycle and ride around, and you will find that there will be 5,000 generalizations. People will say you're riding a motorcycle. You want to be a kid all your life. All the things adding up to one thing. Believe the way I believe, because it's important.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.